Good morning and welcome to our roundtable panel for this Tuesday, the 17th of June, which is my wife's birthday.
Happy birthday, Kelly.
It's Kelly's birthday. So I'll wish Kelly a happy birthday.
She'll be mad at you for saying that.
She will. She will hate me. But
it's also the 42nd anniversary of the Watergate break-in. Just
wow. Saying. Well, it's the 45th anniversary of the movie. Yeah.
Oh, that's
or
right.
Something like that. So it has to be more for the break-in.
That's
it was 45 for the movie.
That's amazing, because I thought...
1972.
Mike just said the 41st?
1972.
Yeah, so it's more than
42,
that.
42. Yeah.
Well, because I thought I could swear we just had celebrated the 40th 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
So now...
Time flies.
So time flies.
And the white Bronco on the
LA
how
freeway.
Long ago was that?
That was 20 years ago.
Yeah, guy was not guilty, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Jury of his peers.
So
he was acquitted.
Yeah.
And then found guilty in a civil suit.
No, that's right. How can you be guilty if your peers say you're not guilty?
Well, but he was guilty in the civil court.
Well, I'm not going to argue the fact with you because I thought it
anything
was
going on this June 17th besides your wife's birthday?
Yeah, we have lots going on.
Oh, you mean we have to talk about that?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Let's talk about Iran and Iraq in a moment. But first, because we were all talking about it before during the break, and you're all fresh, so
fresh.
Let me
Milton Berle fresh.
Not that kind of fresh. But let's talk about a Zephyr Teach Shout. Out.
What Zephyr is a name Teach like out? That worth?
That's the best name in the world.
Nobody will ever forget Zephyr Teach Out.
Right.
Yeah. So Zephyr Teach Out has made it official yesterday. She's running in a primary, going to primary Andrew Cuomo. Needs 15,000 signatures. She was in this studio yesterday talking to you for an extended period of time.
And she made it clear that Andrew Cuomo, she said, she believed Andrew Cuomo would do every sort of trick to make sure she couldn't get on the ballot. And, you know, if you don't put your middle initial or, you know, if you leave a digit out of your address or something like that, they disqualify you. You get off. And they've changed some of that, made it a little easier to stay on, but not much. And so if you have to have 15,000 signatures, you really need at least 30 to survive.
45.
Yeah, probably need
45
to survive.
Right.
And as you were pointing out, Libby, the problem will be the Workers' Family Party people will not be able to sign those petitions. It needs to be enrolled Democrats.
Well, yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So a big base of her support is sort of knocked out by the governor's coup getting the Workers' Family Party to nominate him.
Right. Yeah, unlike my good state of Massachusetts, where I live, and where you can vote basically is an open primary system. If you're an unenrolled voter, you can vote in either primary.
That
you'd get a lot of people who would be voting for over there, but not in the state.
Yeah, well, I want to know what the infrastructure is for the campaign. How is she going to get all those signatures? The boots on the ground.
All we can tell you is that Joe and I, our mouths were open, because as she marched in here yesterday with our lieutenant governor candidate, there were like 9 people with movie cameras. It was as if
she
was
great.
A star.
Well, that's great.
It was like a reality show.
It probably is going to be a reality show.
Yeah.
Now, she's a law professor at Fordham, and Tim Wu, her running mate, is a law professor at Columbia. So they're coming into this with a knowledge of the law, and they'll be astute about the election law, I presume. And I think you're right, Libby, that they're going to need maybe 3 times the number of signatures if they're going to survive a
That's de rigueur in election world.
Well,
you get 2 to 3 times the amount of signatures that you need. And she's going to need boots on the ground, and without the Working Families Party. And, you know, they could do lots of commissioners of deeds and things like that, and notaries could carry for her. But still, that's a whole another set of people. And you can hire people to do it, but it's not going
to
be easy, because Cuomo's going to have the committee wrapped up.
Well, I asked her how you could help her if you wanted to, and she said you could go to her website, and that will give you total instructions, you know, on how to do it if you want to. But yeah, you're right. If she was a Working Families Party candidate, she could have done some real damage on a third line.
Well, Alan, what would it mean if she is able to get on the ballot and wage a primary against Governor Cuomo and the Democratic Party?
It'll hurt the governor, and I'll tell you how. Look, he's way ahead. The Siena poll came out yesterday. He couldn't have been more pleased about it. But the fact is, there is a left of the party. We saw it at the Working Families Convention. There was almost a revolution. There was hissing. There was booing for the governor. And a lot of those folks, people who are progressives, are going to vote for Teachout. There's no two ways about it. If she gets on the ballot, it will be some source of embarrassment.
There seems to me, and I'm only going by, I didn't hear your complete conversation, that'll air later this week, but of the clips that I heard, it seems that one of the things that many have spoken about the governor is this hint of intimidation within the administration to people who are work against him and so forth. And she addresses that.
Oh, boy.
And says, you know, that she felt the heat. She knows she's going to feel the heat, but felt the obligation to run against it.
She's clearly a woman of terrific courage. You know, she said that her parents were hippies. So naturally I asked her if
Hence
she was...
Zephyr Teachout.
Yeah. Teachout is the family name, but Zephyr was the inspired name.
Yes.
So she's been raised in a sort of counterculture way, the ability to sort of speak her mind. And speak her mind, she does. And she says, I said, do you ever get up in the middle of the night and say this guy has such a bad reputation being mean you worry that he'll come after you? She said, no, never, not ever. And, you know, that's the kind of person who does this kind of thing.
Right. She's going to have a Teflon. She's going to have to let it all flow because he's going to come after her. It's not going to be pretty. Perfect. But he can't. He has to be careful.
Yeah, because he can't be picking on the lady.
Right.
Yeah.
He can't be as acerbic and nasty as he would be against Astorino in the general.
Who was the one who took a step towards, who was it? Was it, you remember, there was a debate. And the guy...
Oh, it was that moron from that state.
He was in the vice presidential...
Lazio took the step
to Hillary.
Right. And that
came
was,
over
right.
physically and
yes.
approached
and
her.
Right, and that was it.
That did it.
Yeah.
I mean, I bet you're not going to have any debates. I think he's just going to ignore this candidacy.
Well, remember what his father did, and I was unfortunately a part of that.
What's his face? The
Mario. He said, "Well, no, I'm not gonna do a one-on-one debate with you. I'm only gonna have all the dwarfs, the so-called dwarfs.
Right.
There's six other guys who are running
right.
one way or the other, and he wouldn't come on. The opponent wouldn't come on. Pataki, I guess it was.
Well, remember was the one where they put the cardboard cutout.
They always do that.
Republican who was running. I can't remember.
Andrew Patrick O'Rourke, I think.
O'Rourke, right.
Well, O'Rourke called up a call-in show and said, and got him, because the only way he would debate him is he called him up. I don't remember if it was Vox Pop War, but he calls him up and he says, now, God damn it, Governor. And the governor says, as long as you defame the name of God, you know, I am not going to debate you. It was great.
Wow.
Quoting a public figure is okay.
Yeah. That's right.
You think I shouldn't have said that?
No, I think you're right.
That's all right.
It's okay.
Right.
I'm just a direct quote.
Can I ask this question and we'll move on, but how will, there's all the problems, there's the Teflon necessity, let's put that aside for a second. How will a progressive Democratic message work in upstate counties such as Essex, Warren, Washington, Clinton?
Let me put it this way. In my opinion, she is not going to win.
Really?
This particular time, it appears that.
No, she is not going to win.
No.
But she could cause him a little bit of pain. And in his case, you know, he doesn't like it when people give him a hard time.
I think it's jobs, jobs, jobs. And what she, because she's not going to win, and she has the ability to say, to bring up issues, she will, I think, clearly make the connection between the people who have their boot on the neck of working folks and
yes.
Cuomo.
Yeah.
And the connections between, you know, the relationships between Cuomo and the Koch brothers and Cuomo and other people on the right. And that will be brought up. Now, whether the Democrats in Essex County or, you know, in those counties will respond to that remains to be seen.
But there will be some.
But there will be some, yes.
Well,
there
it'll be New York City and the populated areas that could come out strong for
That's
her.
Right.
Right. Albany.
But doesn't the impact of her candidacy and the nomination that the governor was able to win from the Working Family Party, doesn't this swing him back to left of the center a little bit?
Well, he is so good at this. I mean, you know, he goes to the working families, they boo him. Mm-hmm. And they say, you're responsible for the
he walks out with the nomination.
You're responsible for the Democrats being not in control of the New York State Senate. It's you're responsible for that. He said, no, I'm for it. Now, we all know that he could tomorrow bring the four or five errant Democrats in, shake his well-known finger at them.
And that's that.
And tell them, get back where you belong. But he said, after he promised the convention he would bring the Democrats back into control of the Senate, he said, I'm going to do this. So I can't help myself. I'm sorry. I apologize.
Well, he said it's all not partisan politics or something like that. I mean, he could have done it, and he didn't. And he isn't.
Hasn't done it yet. Anyway.
He hasn't done it yet, and will.
Oh, I think in the end he'll do it. He may end up. Look, he has to run for president in his mind. He will run for president, and therefore, when he gets that convention, somebody's going to say to him, "Andrew, you kept the Republicans in control in your state." So after, because you remember, a lot of what Andrew does comes out of the Papa Cuomo playbook. And Papa Cuomo always had Warren Anderson and Ralph Marino to blame everything on because, you know, that way he didn't have to be the bad guy and say no to the liberals in the assembly in the Senate. And that was good. So Andrew sees that as the playbook. There's no question about it. And that's why he's doing what he's doing.
Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll talk about other issues, and we welcome your comments. As always, we've already gotten a couple. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. We will be back after the short break.
Support for WAMC goes from Tannery Pond Concerts, New Lebanon, New York, presenting Axel Strauss violin and Ilya Poletiev piano this Saturday at 8 p.m., 888-820-1696. The Henyon Bakery Emmer since 1993, offering hearth-baked whole-grain breads, pastries, birthday and special occasion cakes, as well as gluten-free offerings. HenyonBakery.com. And Edward Garbazik, Certified Financial Planner, Havoc and Wealth Strategies, Wilbraham, Massachusetts, providing customized financial retirement strategies for those approaching or in retirement. HavocandWealthStrategies.com.
Welcome back to the roundtable. Al-Qaeda-inspired insurgents battled government forces in several locations across Iraq on Monday, as the United Nations said the insurgents almost certainly had committed war crimes by carrying out cold-blooded executions in their drive for power. The stunning offensive by fighters from the Islamic State of Iraq and Syria, ISIS, poses an existential challenge to Iraq and threatens the stability of the region, Secretary of State John Kerry said Monday. He said President Obama is considering every option that is available, including airstrikes. In a highly unusual move, Iranian and U.S. diplomats on Monday discussed possible cooperation to help stop the insurgents' advance. That's two paragraphs with a lot of stuff in it. The U.S. Teaming with Iran, obviously the cold-blooded executions, the fact that the UN has said that this is indeed the case, and Secretary of State John Kerry saying that every option is on the table, including airstrikes. So, Alan, what do you think? We talked about this yesterday,
sure.
but again, you have to take the Secretary of State's word that all options are on the table, and we still don't know where this is going to go.
Well, you know, I'm not nearly as smart as them. I don't have as many spies as they do, and I don't have billions of dollars in intelligence guys sitting around figuring out what to do. But I have no idea what they can do. I mean, I have no idea what they can do. They can drop a few bombs, but as has been pointed out many times, that has never won a war for anybody. You know, I really don't see it. The Daily News today really came after him.
After the president.
Oh, boy. Yeah, he said, you got out too early, you know, and you've set this whole thing up to fail. I think the blame game is going to go on, you know, if I'm him, I don't know what I do. I really don't know what I do. Now we're playing ball with the Iranians.
Haven't really played ball with them.
Well, yet, when they leak, yeah. Mike, yeah. when they leak that we're talking to them about it, I think this is the politics of desperation. Mm-hmm. I mean, these are the great Satans, let's face it.
Right.
That's what the press had done and all the rest. Now they're saying, well, we might not collaborate on military. And then all of a sudden we hear that their military is there. And we know that the Iranians and the Iraqis had fought a hell of a war for a long time. Again, we're going to end up backing, if we end up backing one partner. And then when that's over, what do we got? Bippity boppity boo.
Well, this is a modern-day crusades, and they're going to keep fighting until their side wins for Allah or whoever else they're going to fight for, and that's that. You know, nothing we can do is going to stop what's going on there because it's a religious battle, and they want to make up for decades, if not eons, of oppression of the Sunni people and everything that's
gone
on.
Or the other way around.
Right. I mean, it's like, you know, who knows? It's like, who's on first? You know, but, you know, the Shiites, when Saddam Hussein was in power, oppressed the Sunnis, and then it was the other way around. And, you know, it's this is going to go on for a while, regardless of what we do. You know, the only way we can stop this is to bomb everyone and take everybody out, which we're not going to do.
Well, who is supplying this faction, this jihadist faction that is trying
to... Well, first of all, I heard on NPR this morning, or the BBC this morning, that they, maybe it was NPR, that they raided the bank in Mosul.
Yes.
Took $400 mm-hmm. million dollars
right.
out of there.
They're well financed, right. for
yeah,
sure.
And they've yeah. got and they've got a lot of money. So money does not seem to be their problem. And by the way, when they took Mosul, I think I heard this morning that they only used like 300 troops to do it.
Yeah.
Or less.
Yeah.
So,
well, they're conducting terrorism over the internet. They're showing these horrible footage of you know, mass killing of the captured soldiers, and it's terrifying people.
Mm-hmm.
And it probably makes it easier when they come in that, you know, come into a town because everyone is seen or knows of this.
Well, but, also, Mike, in those towns in the north, there are huge Sunni populations,
mm-hmm.
and that's
mm-hmm.
a big part of why they're finding it so easy to get ahead.
Alan, we have 30 seconds. You have two letters?
Oh, got a letter. Do you really think that Cuomo is worried about losing to this woman in a primary and spend millions to do it? She has a snowball's chance in hell, and he knows it. Michael, yeah, but he doesn't... Character. It all comes down to character.
He doesn't like
criticism.
Right.
It's that simple. And one always worries, no matter what your name is, that's the case. And there's a second one in here somewhere. Among all of these emails that we've gotten...
We have 15 seconds. Do you want to wait?
Oh, no, here we go. Good morning. Sometimes this week, please consider Teach Out's primary run announcement on the context, on the content of her address. It looks like the law professor has a terrific lesson plan for New York.
Good morning and welcome back to our roundtable panel for this Tuesday, the 17th of June. It is 37 minutes past 9 o'clock and we are back. We have a couple of letters to read and then we will get to some other stories making news.
Yes, we do. We have one right here from Steve in Kingston. I really appreciate Alan's take on our democracy. It's one thing to be bitter and deny the accuracy of events that transpire. O.J. was tried by... I wondered where this is going. Now I know. O.J. was tried by a jury of his peers and was not convicted before the civil suit. Case closed. maybe. Okay, and then James says, I am tired of these select few legacy families that always run and win political office. They all have the same unions and friends with similar interests, and none of which are really benefit the general public, low and middle class. P.S. As always, love the show. That's what I got. Is there anything?
Thank you.
See anything else?
No, that looks good.
Okay.
So let's move over to some interesting stories on the front page of the Times Union that affect us all, beginning with the Tappan Zee Bridge.
Well, the story today by our reporter, Brian Nearing, looks at one of the unusual ways the state is coming up with the $3.9 billion it needs to construct the new Tappan Zee Bridge.
More than the new Cuomo Tappan Zee Bridge?
Well, we don't know for whom it will be named.
It should be the Pete Seeger Bridge.
Yes, well, anyways, whatever it's called, more than $500 million of the funding to build it is coming from the state's Clean Water Revolving Loan Fund. It's a water quality program that's supposed to protect the environment and the estuary of the Hudson River.
A little bit of a reach.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Matt Driscoll, who heads that Environmental Facilities Corp, the State Environmental Facilities Corp, says the $511 million from the Clean Water Fund will be loaned to the Thruway Authority to pay for work, including the disassembly and removal of the existing 59-year-old bridge and dredging of the river. So that at the site of the new bridge, and that'll clean out the bottom of the river. There was already some criticism. Peter Iwanowitz, the executive director of the environmental lobbying group, Environmental Advocates of New York, is questioning diverting state funds that are meant for cleaning water to supporting construction of a bridge, and he's troubled by it. He says there's already enormous unmet need for sewage treatment cleanups in the New York City area, and they could go unfunded because of the significant shift in resources. Meanwhile, the Cuomo administration is continuing to line up more funding to pay for this big project, and it's still a question how the bonds and the loans will be paid off, but probably you're going to see some effect on the tolls on the thruway and all
what
the bridges.
What do you mean
bridges.
Probably?
It'll cost us $20 to go to Buffalo.
Well, there's been estimates that it could raise the toll, which is about $5, $4.50 if you have an easy pass. It could raise the toll to be $14, but that might be spread across all the Mid-Hudson Bridge, all the Hudson Valley bridges, and the Thruway itself.
What does the Verrazano cost? Now, it's something right up there, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. I think those bridges are closer. They're pushing towards
like
10. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it is expensive, but
the Tappan Zee, you only pay one way, so they could make it that you pay both ways.
Well, yeah, get your going, get your coming.
That's a good point.
Right.
Literally and figuratively, right?
You don't pay going north. You only pay going into the city. So
that's the same with the Newbury Beacon Bridge and the George Washington Bridge.
Yeah, a lot of them are like
I just
want to
point out that when they built the George Washington Bridge,
yes,
I think it was a quarter then, and they said, as soon as it's paid off,
right,
there'll be no more tolls.
I believe that was what they said about the New York State Thruway.
Yes, they did. They did. And it's never
always operating costs that you have to cover, you know.
Right.
I like it.
Okay, so talk about the bridge. Now let's talk about casinos. We'll go to exit 27.
Exit 27 on the far edge, the western edge of the Capital Region, Montgomery County. It's a site that is partly in the city of Amsterdam, but mostly in the town of Florida. And it has the support of the local town board, which last night gave it unanimous approval for a $250 million casino proposal. But this is interesting because the developers are asking for a break from the state. They don't want to have to pay all of the $50 million licensing fee that other applicants in the Capital Region are going to have to pay. And they want a different split on how much money they have to cough over to the local governments. They say that's in line with the way it is in other parts of the state, the Catskills and the Southern Tier, where they are not required to pay as much as the casinos that are being proposed for the Capital Region. And the reason, of course, is that this is a very economically depressed area. The unemployment rate of about 7% is superseded by the child poverty rate of something in the 20s. It's just a very difficult situation out there. They say this is why the constitutional amendment was proposed to help economically depressed areas. This is one. They say they should be given special consideration for that. They need the 850 permanent jobs that would come with this and the 450 construction jobs. And you know, so they're pushing for the state to give them a little break and let them eventually pay the state back over time. That's what they contend. And it's just coming down to the wire in a couple of weeks, just less than 2 weeks, the applications have to be in.
And think about it for a second. You know, one of the great curses of gambling is that it happens on the backs of poor people.
Right.
So here they're making the argument, we're poor. And all of a sudden you see that we're poor, so we need this gambling.
Oh, there's certainly some irony there, but they when you look at all the arguments and the way that the constitutional amendment was worded, certainly it was sold as being a way to bail out economically depressed areas, and they're making the case that in the capital region they are the most economically depressed.
Yeah, and on the backs of the poor, as I may
certainly, but also providing employment. You know, that's an argument I think has been lost because the constitutional amendment passed.
But
you're not wrong.
They want to give less money to local government.
Slightly less.
And that's
over
where,
time.
That's who really needs the money is local government.
Well, they need jobs too. I mean, I believe this is what they're arguing, although your point is good. And how will they decide?
Yeah.
You know, are they going to, they certainly are going to be deferential to the local town boards and the city councils and the county legislatures. And they're certainly going to let economics be a factor, but they're also going to decide based on the viability of the project. If you have a really smart project and you look like you have expertise in it, that's going to weigh heavily with the decision to grant a license. And, you know, so it'll...
Well, I'm not exactly sure who really is pulling the strings here. Somebody's pulling the strings, and, you know, you never really know what... Who's that? Somebody's at the door. I was going to say, but in my state of Massachusetts, where I live, it's interesting because there has been a reconsideration or a quickening on the matter of whether people want these things in the first place. First, everybody voted for it. Now, when it's not in my backyard, is happening and it's coming around.
Buyer's remorse.
And now they're trying. Indeed. They're waiting to see whether there's the AG, remember her, Martha Coakley, and others will permit. It's gone to the courts now. Whether there's can be a second vote in Massachusetts, we're not going to have that in New York State.
No movement to have another constitutional amendment.
Yeah.
It would take two successive legislatures.
It's
very difficult.
I don't think Andrew would like it.
But let's take a look at where Turning Stone is. You know, has there been a great economic renaissance in Rome and Verona, New York.
Two gentlemen.
Well, there are jobs out there. I mean, it's employed hundreds and hundreds of people. I don't have the numbers.
Well, or Atlantic City, Libby.
But you walk two blocks.
Well,
east of the casinos,
my point.
It's a pit.
My point.
Yeah.
You take my point?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay.
So
yes,
what
yes,
is
yes,
the
I'll
geographic, is there some sort of, in the selection process, is geography taken into account? Meaning if you put one at 27, you've got one at what, 33?
Out in Turning Stone.
Yeah. And 23 is gone, right? Route 23
yes.
is gone?
Yeah, exit except, 20,
oh, exit 23.
Unless they go to
Rensselaer. Yeah, the one at Albany, right. The city of Albany is losing momentum in some way to observe. So it looks like it could be East Greenbush, Schenectady, or exit 27. There's still I talk about having one at House Caverns or House Cave.
What about Rensselaer?
Rensselaer has lost traction.
The
developer that was backing it has kind of pulled out.
Meantime, Springfield, right?
Springfield is close.
Well, that's what I mean.
But economic viability is a part of it. So positioning it too close to another thriving casino could be a factor. On the other hand, the people at Exit 27 are arguing it's a gateway to both the Catskills and the Adirondacks and to Western New York. It's going to get it's right there at the thruway exit. And it's not more than 20-25 minutes from the heart of the capital region, so it's convenient and close, and you know, this is their case.
Want to know who's pulling the strings.
Well, the question is it the state gaming board?
Or do they
board?
Take their orders from a higher authority?
Well, do you think that there will be influence from the second floor of the state capitol on where to award this?
I think that is a
possibility?
Yeah. Because I think it's the way things happen, but you know, I'm sure that they would take great exception to that.
We'll take a break. We'll take great exception for the next few moments, and then we'll be back and read your letters and get to other issues as well. Roundtable at WAMC.org, roundtable at WAMC.org. You're listening to The Roundtable on
Support for WAMC goes on PS21, Performance Spaces for the 21st Century, Chatham, New York, presenting Repast Baroque Ensemble with Dong Suk Shin, performing works by Johann Sebastian Bach, June 22nd, 2 p.m., ps21chatham.org. The Honest Wade Food Co-op, located at 100 Watervliet Avenue in Albany, offering local and organic produce, groceries, specialty foods, and more, honestwade.coop. Kingsway Community, Schenectady, New York, offering a continuum of care and services to area seniors since 1975, including independent living, apartments, home care, and more, 518-393-8800. And Binghamton University's Watson School of Engineering and Applied Science, dedicated to preparing engineering and computer science students to meet the challenges of the future, binghamton.edu.
Welcome back to the roundtable. Just a few minutes left. We'll wrap up. First, before we do that, we have a letter
from Tom.
Yes.
Have you ever noticed the quality of the road going from 787 to the thruway? The point being, if you want nice things, you have to pay for them, and increasing tolls that users pay hurts but makes sense.
Well, that stretch there is really pretty rocky, I have to say. I'm on it a lot.
On 787.
787 to the thruway.
And then the thruway is brand new from that exit 23 west to exit 24.
Yes.
Right.
And I notice...
Spectacular.
It is great. It's wonderful. And there's some nice stuff going down south, too, but still.
And then the free B90. You know the free B90 as opposed to the real 90?
Yeah.
The free B90 is never kept as well because as
it's
the thruway.
Because it's a freebie.
Well, it's a freebie.
And it runs through the city.
Yes.
Yes.
I just thought I'd mention
that. Well, thank you.
Well, it's a good point. Your your tolls do pay for better, you know, pavement.
Point to Tom Mix.
Okay, your choice. We have one issue that we can do. Your choice. Starbucks College, healthcare questions, or Dean Biquet?
Dean Biquet.
Okay. Let's go.
Explain.
And it is Biquet, yes?
I thought it was Biquet, but I've heard it pronounced Biquet. But okay. Dean Biquet.
Anyway. The executive editor of the New York Times had a malignant tumor removed from his kidney on Saturday and will spend about a week away from the office while recovering, he said in an email to the newspaper staff on Monday morning. He took the Times' top newsroom job last month after the abrupt dismissal of Jill Abramson, its first female executive editor. On Thursday, Harvard announced that Ms. Abramson planned to teach there this fall. Doctors discovered the tumor on Thursday and felt that it required immediate attention. He had minimally invasive, completely successful surgery, and he said, "My doctors have given me an excellent prognosis."
Well, I think this just points to that, you know, having been diagnosed with a form of cancer is not what it used to be, and that people can expect to have full recoveries, and we certainly
depending on the site.
Yeah, and as you were pointing out during the break, Alan, this is a type of cancer quaternary that is quite treatable with positive results, and that is apparently the message he's getting. He's 57 years old. That's relatively young, and he's healthy, and he should be back at the helm within a week, he says, and he needs to be back there showing leadership because the New York Times has been going through some turmoil after the you know, the very publicly played firing of Jill Abramson and some of the division that has
to say
caused.
Nothing of all the same, pardon me, same problems everybody else is going through with the digital revolution.
Right. And they're struggling to be ahead of that, and it is a struggle.
Yeah, it is a struggle, but they, I must say, they're doing a good job. I keep hearing about how much trouble they're in. On the other hand, you know,
the paper keeps coming
I read
out.
It 5 times a day, and it's very good.
And you get your updates, and you go right to it, and you say, "Oh, mm-hmm. good, there's new content," yeah. and it's an interesting.
It's the model, I think. They're emerging. The model is emerging that will be the future for.
Well, and also, yeah. not every newspaper is the national newspaper. I think the Times is the national newspaper.
They've maintained that franchise, while a lot of others, like the LA Times and the Washington Post, have had to really give up mm-hmm. a lot of that.
Yeah, sure. Mm-hmm.
All right. I want to thank everybody for being a part of the program. Thank you very much for being with us. Libby Post, Mike Spain, and Alan Chartak, thank you so much. We'll see you all tomorrow. I guess, okay. Libby and Mike, we won't see you tomorrow. No. We'll see you tomorrow, Alan.
I'll be back next Tuesday.
See you soon.
Excellent. Okay, you two will be back next Tuesday. We look forward to it. We'll be back after this real quick.